Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest? Oh, I see. They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
My name is Sean.
And we are back on Kryn. We're back in the world of Dragonlance. We are covering the companions, the heroes of the War of the Lance, and we are at everyone's favorite Kender, at least everyone on this podcast episode.
Yeah. We don't want to speak for the legions of listeners.
We're talking about Tasselhoff Burfoot.
What a great name!
It's a fantastic name. And we're going to talk more about Kenders. It's going to be the patron bonus episode for this month because the Kender species from Dragonlance is a lot of fun. Like before we started recording, Sean, you mentioned that they were like more hobbit-like than the halflings of D&D, who are obviously the hobbit is the inspiration for the halfling, right? But they can't really say hobbit. They
have right.
to say something else. But I feel that the Kender has more of that sort of whimsy and sort of rascal, there you go, that rascally, the rascally aspect of the hobbit, that's the hobbit folk, the shire folk, that's kind of missing from the halfling. You also can't scare a Kender. They are immune to fear.
Are they really?
Yeah. We'll talk all about the Kender when it comes to that episode, but for right now we're talking about one specific Kender by the name of Tasselhoff, Tass to his friends, a member of the companions, you know, a group obviously including Caramon Magier, Raistlin Magier, and all the others that we know and love, Sturm Brightblade, of course, and embarked on numerous adventures with them. Now Tass was born on December 2nd, 313 AC, meaning after Cataclysm, of course, to unknown parents. Although Tass did have a little sister, he also had an extended family, including a few uncles with some great names, like Remo, Lockpick, and Birdie. Fantastic names. Also had a cousin named Latchlifter Furfoot. These names are Tracy Hickman, Margaret Weiss. Thank you so much. Tass was raised with these relatives until about the age of 16, at which point he developed his wanderlust itch. Now, this is something that afflicts all Kender after they reach a certain age, at which point the Kender will begin to wander the world looking for adventure, not being able to stay put in one place for too long.
Which is not very hobbit-like, actually. That definitely distinguishes them from hobbits.
Right. It's kind of like
to stay at home.
It's kind of like if Kenders are like a whole like species of Bilbos,
right?
And Frodo's for that matter.
Yeah.
And Sam's. Why not? Merry and Pippin's. The five
the hero hobbits.
The five hobbits that actually did something with their lives. Although if you were to tell me now, like, would you like to live a life of just like living off the land and just hanging out with your friends and family and, you know, eating and drinking, like eating like 18 times a day. And
Right.
I'd be
Delicious
like,
meals. Yeah. Have
I'd say,
a pantry
instead
full
of
of cheesy
working 40 hours
meals.
a
Yeah.
week in a taupe office, like, yeah, I'd probably, you're, I mean, look, I think they've cracked the code. Anyway, so physically, Taz looks like your typical Kender. He's just under 4 feet tall, thinly built, very svelte, with narrow pointed ears, brown eyes, and he also kept his brown hair in a top knot. So might have popularized that look now that that men with hair seem to enjoy. Something
Yeah, I
that,
wouldn't know anything
you know,
about that.
we don't have to degrade ourselves thinking about. Taz was a clever little scamp, always ready with a big smile and a tendency to talk one's ear off, especially about stuff that really didn't matter. Now, I feel attacked about this.
Yeah, I actually wrote a note on the notes that said, this sounds very familiar.
This sounds like a direct attack, and I don't, I'm going to finish the episode, but I'm not going to be happy about it.
I don't appreciate it.
He had a clear lifting or lilting alto voice, and those close to him will tell you that Taz has a tendency to eat when bored. Again, personal attack. So, what of Taz's early life? So, as a child, Taz filled his room with maps covering every wall, lacking the patience to draw them accurately, which I love. I love the fact that, you know, he's like, I don't have time to make sure this is accurate. I don't have time to make sure this is right. I got more maps to draw. And in fact, he created his own names for places on Ancelon. You know, he didn't know the actual names of these geographic areas, these you know, canyons, mountains, stuff like that. So he just made up his own names, which again, very, very adorable.
Yes.
Early on, he disliked being called a thief, preferring terms like borrowing or handling, though others are like, you're stealing. He just labeled his actions as stealing, as what they were. In addition to his quote unquote borrowing, he would sometimes make dubious claims, such as witnessing the coronation of an elven prince in Quel'Thalas. And this, you know, sort of behavior, this, you know, borrowing slash stealing, these tall tales, this sort of behavior ran in the family because one time Taz's sister once set his shoe on fire as a prank, which that's not a prank. That's assault.
Yeah, that's attempted murder.
at the very most, you know, simple assault at the least.
Yeah.
So in 342 AC, while in Solace, Taz finds a ring that's dropped by a thief. Now, this ring, later known as Taz's Ring of Transportation, allows him to teleport across Kryn, across the planet. His travels lead him to the Magus Tower, where he assisted the Prince of Demons in thwarting Magus's nefarious plans with demons. He then left Magus in the prince's capable hands in the Abyss. Also, while traveling around in 344 AC, he encountered a dwarf named Flint Fireforge, and this especially, obviously, is going to be the friendship of that changes his life, that a friendship that has worldwide ramifications on Kryn, on Ancelon. So, he met Flint, as well as Tanis Half-Elven, for the first time and sought their friendship, though they were initially reluctant. Taz borrowed a bracelet created by Flint for someone else, which actually later saved his life from a poisonous spider. So assuredly, like, you know, use that as justification for why he had it to begin with. Well, look, it saved my life. Why are we upset? Why are we angry with each other?
Everybody got what they wanted.
He also rescued a merchant from an ambush. You know, just basically getting into, you know, adventures and sort of hijinks as a result of his actions. When the aforementioned person who the bracelet was for arrived to collect it and found it missing, she demanded its return. And so then they had to all go on a quest to retrieve it. Along the way, they were waylaid by satyrs who compelled them to dance and drink and waste time. While in Tantalon, the four of them, Taz, Flint, Tanis, and Selena, who was the supposed to be the recipient of the bracelet, they were captured by a local lord. And in order to escape, Taz and Selena underwent a transformation by drinking a polymorph potion. Now they turned into birds to infiltrate. And I love this because this is some part like PC party D&D thinking outside the box, like how are we going to escape sort of behavior. I love it. They turned into birds to infiltrate a castle and then into mice to retrieve the bracelet while also managing to rescue Flint and Tannis in the process. About a year later, the summer of 345 AC, Taz was captured by Minotaurs while on a journey with Sturm Brightblade and Caramon Magier. They were trying to obtain a special herb for Caramon's twin brother, Raistlin. Taz was taken to the Minotaur Empire, where a potion turned him evil.
Happens
Now,
to all of us.
we've seen that episode of Star Trek. He grew a goatee and.
Right. Started killing his way up the chain of command.
And I love this. It says that he gleefully embraced his evil side, which, and it's
It sounds more rascally what he
it, it's
does
still, yeah,
than
exactly.
true
And
evil.
I don't want to, yeah, like the beginning of that note makes it seem like he starts like killing people. Like, well, I'm evil now. I'm gonna start killing people. No, he continues doing like the same sort of stuff that he was doing before. He pranks his Minotaur guards by having them repeatedly repaint the room he was staying in at the Minotaur Palace, which, if that's your definition of evil, like, you are my sweet summer child. You have
Yeah.
not experienced much.
I mean, I guess if he was abusive to the guards or something, like he could be a reality TV character. There's another idea for your network.
Some of your favorite D&D characters drink an evil potion, and let's see how they act. Taz pretty much acts the same, just maybe he's a little bit more nasty in his words. He even playfully removed Sturm's mustache while visiting him in prison. Again, not evil, a bit of a jerk move because like Sturm was really,
Attached.
attached. But I'm Mary would appreciate that pun to that mustache. But again, like not evil, not, he's not committing crimes against humanity.
No, he took a dude's mustache. Here's the thing about mustaches, they grow back.
They do grow back. They sometimes too fast. I'm like, I just shaved this a few days ago. So eventually Taz finds himself on Carthay, where the companions are reunited and confronting the Nightmaster. Now, this Nightmaster fella was trying to free Sargonus, who was the god of wrath, vengeance, and retribution from the abyss. Probably not the best idea if you are a good guy, right? Eventually, he befriends someone by the name of Dogs, and this new friend gives Taz a counteracting potion that restores him to his normal, non-evil self. Again, doesn't seem like much of a difference in my eyes. He's still just kind of playing foolies and being a rascal of sorts, but I digress. I'm just really worried that if I were to take an evil potion, my behavior wouldn't change either. So either your behavior is evil to begin with, or you're so good that this is what you think evil is, and
Sort
so
of like
pure of heart.
like in Spider-Man 3 when Peter has the symbiote suit and starts acting like what he thinks is a badass, but he's just kind of like goofy and dressing emo and dancing disco dancing and
On the
stuff.
street,
Like
yeah.
that like is not cool, but it's like in his head.
Like
Like
this is what evil is,
right,
yeah.
this is I am a badass right now.
Right now. So at this point, Taz then frees Raistlin, and together the companions turn the tables on the Minotaurs, escaping the island right as a volcano erupts. And again, this is Taz continues to find himself in these crazy adventures. for me personally, one of the most fun characters of the companions. You know, they each sort of have their archetype that they fill, right? You know, Sturm, as we discussed, is the tragic hero.
Tragic hero, yeah.
Flint Fireforge is like very like stoic and you know, will always be the same no matter what. We can always depend on, lean on. And Taz, I wouldn't say is the comedic relief, but definitely brings some levity to the situation. And someone actually posted this in the meme section today on the D&D Lorecast Discord. And this, not sure what the original source is, but they perfectly capture like the feel and the vibe of Dragonlance. It says, it's a post-apocalyptic fantasy. This isn't a bustling cosmopolitan world filled with wonders and thousands of alien peoples. It's a world where humans struggle to survive. They're plagued by bandits, barbarians, and warlords. A world where the dwarves shut their gates to their mountain fortresses and left everyone outside to burn in the cataclysm. Where elves have abandoned the mortals and closed their forests off to outsiders. Where secretive orders of mages abduct children with magical potential and force them to undergo lethal tests of power, hunt witches, and magicians who defy their iron grasp, determined to control all magic and killing those who resist. A world where the gods have forsaken the people, where heroes are stuffed of lost myths, a world where there are no miracles and hope seems lost. But when it is darkest, when vast hordes of goblins, ogres, and mutant draconians threaten to overrun the last bastions of civilization, when whispers of wicked dragons who have not been seen in centuries destroying entire cities and the dead rise and ransack towns, that is when heroes rise. In Dragonlance, you are the light in that darkness. You are the world's last hope against the desperate might of the dragon armies. You are the heroes who can restore balance and restore miracles to the world. It's more Lord of the Rings than Star Wars. Your knights and magi fighting the forces of evil. If you prefer being a slime person who runs fetch quests to buy magic items in a shop and want a lighter or sillier game, Dragonlance probably isn't for you. Spelljammer is awesome, but it's also the complete opposite in tone and style. That being said, there is still humor and weirdness in Dragonlance. The Kender can be comedy gold, as they are fearless, overly curious, have a biological drive to explore and learn things, and have only loose conceptions of private property. Gnomes are the prototypical mad scientist gnomes now famous in Warcraft, full of wacky magic experiments. Sea elves are alien and mysterious, and there are more alien species too, like the Urda or the Eri. And so, yeah, like I said, not sure what the original source of that is, not sure what genius wrote that, but perfectly captures the vibe of Dragonlance. You know, Tasselhoff is very much, like I said, not the comedic relief, but does bring some levity to the situation. Because it's
R2-D2 or BB-8. Like they get off in their own little adventures and stuff, and but they're heroes at core.
They're absolutely heroes, just like Tess, 100%. And so about 5 years later, the companions they separate, and 5 years later they come back together. And in that time, Taz again manages to get himself in a few pickles. First, he was brought back to Kendermore by a bounty hunter named Gisela Hornslager. To add insult to injury, along the journey, Gisela refers to Taz by various names like Burrhead, Buzzfoot, Bramblefoot, and Tasselfoot. He was arrested. The reason that he's being detained by this bounty hunter is because he broke his marriage oath to Damaris Metwinger, which is a violation of the Kender Code of Conduct. Upon his return, Taz discovers that both his uncle Trapspringer and his fiancée have gone missing. So he searches the ruins of the Tower of High Sorcery at Los Arkham to seek for clues, the search for clues. So now the Tower of High Sorcery at Los Arkham, also known as the Black Knife, stood as one of Ancelon's Towers of High Sorcery, situated on the outskirts of the city of Khimsudri in the relatively barren wasteland of Dravenar. Now, rising nearly 400 feet tall, the tower was constructed from obsidian, so it resembled a knife. And its shadow loomed over the city at dawn, while at dusk it glowed crimson in the twilight's reflection.
That's so cool.
It's very cool. Despite its dark appearance, the tower did not reflect the light of Solinari or Lunatari, although the outline of Nuatari could be discerned on its surface. So it didn't reflect the light of the white moon or the red moon, only the black moon. Two parapets adorned the tower, one stark white, the other crimson red, representing the other two orders of magic. Encircling the tower was the Sorthan Grove, leading to a courtyard paved with white gravel that led to the tower's entrance. The towering doors were crafted from this blood-red stone, engraved with images of the three moons and protected by hidden glyphs and runes capable of incinerating intruders. Once you get inside, there is a central staircase winding both up and down, granting access to all levels of the tower and guarded by magical glyphs. The lower levels, those housed initiates' rooms and the chamber for the test of high sorcery, while the upper levels contained rooms for far more experienced mages. And at the tower's peak was the heart chamber, where the magic of the tower was the strongest. The tiles covering the walls of this room were inscribed with words of magic, and the doors to the room were made of ironwood, bound with steel, with additional protective magic placed on them. Beneath the tower lay a network of underground caves where wizards conducted experiments and stored the guardians, which were magical constructs first created in the Age of Dreams. Rumors suggest that looking into the tower's windows reveal sorrowful faces, highlighting the insignificance of individuals in the grand scheme of the world. Which is...
They should have something like that at Disney World.
Right? That sounds fun. That sounds fun. I mean, I would have gone, I would have much rather gone to that than the Millennium Falcon ride. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. I think most people would, right?
Just something to remind myself of my relative insignificance.
Yeah. The cosmic scheme.
So this is where Taz goes to search for clues. And while inside, he finds a secret portal in the magical tower. It is also here that he meets Vincent, who is an ogre living in the ruins of the tower. Now, many years prior, Vincent was part of a raiding party, and while near the ruins, he was shot by an arrow by one of his own companions. Used to be an adventurer till he took an arrow in the knee. However, a kinder family found and healed him and taught him common. He then appointed himself the guardian of the ruins, occasionally saving Kender from the magical grove there. And one of those Kender included Taz, who Vincent pulled back from the portal. However, Taz managed to also drag his uncle and fiance and all the other residents of the nearby village through the portal with him. Now, returning to Kendermore with his fiance Damaris and his uncle Trapspringer, Taz was able to clear his name. And also there's a storm that struck Kendermore, and Taz's quick thinking saved the city. So very quickly he goes from, you know, fugitive to savior of society.
Really worked out for him.
For sure. And so the city is saved, and not only the city is saved, but Taz's bachelorhood is saved because Damaris and Trapspringer actually fall in love with each other and get married. So Taz doesn't can continue the life of a bachelor and going on all these wild adventures,
which is really his sweet spot.
I feel, yeah, that's, I mean, no one wants you know, like Barney from How I Met Your Mother to settle down.
No, that's yeah, exactly. You want him to be off having Barney adventures.
Exactly.
I guess you'll probably talk about it in the Patreon episode, but I am very curious about arranged marriage in the Kinder Society.
No, yeah, we're going to talk all about their culture, their traditions, all that cool stuff, as we usually do when it comes to, you know, different species. But speaking of very cool stuff, we're going to go to the middle of the show and talk about all the very cool middle of the show stuff. And when we come back, we're going to talk some more Tasselhoff Burfoot. Welcome to the middle of the show, where we do all the middly housekeeping things that need to be done each and every week. First and foremost, of course, we want to thank you, the listener. Thank you so much for supporting the show by listening, by downloading it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you listen to our show. Thank you so much. If you could leave a 5-star review on wherever you listen to it, that would be, help us a lot. That helps with, you know, kind of organically growing the show and getting it visibility. You can also follow us on our social medias. We're pretty much everywhere at D&D Lorecast. You can join our Discord. We're always having a fun conversation there at the official D&D Lorecast Discord. You could also go to patreon.com/D&D Lorecast. Sign up for one of the tiers there. We've got bonus content like Patron Plus installments, which are deeper dives into the lore that we cover. We have bonus episodes every month. We have invitations to the actual plays that we run, the patron roundtable, workshops where we can talk about homebrew campaign ideas, homebrew campaign settings, different classes, different characters, stuff like that. But yeah, it's built in a way that we, it was built so if we were fans of the show, like what would we want? So hopefully you can find something that you're into. And a special shout out to our newest patrons over there. We got Corbin, K, Sin V, and One Last Fool. Thank you so much for heading on over to Patreon and signing up. We hope you enjoy all the cool stuff. Next, as far as D&D news is concerned, well, the Lego set is out. The almost 4,000 piece Lego set has been released and it's fantastic. I don't have it personally, but I'm looking at the photos. It's actually backordered. As a matter of fact, it's that popular. And so if you have it already, please go to the Discord and post pictures. We want to see it. And if you want even more D&D Lego fun, the adventure itself has been released. There's a link in the show notes to how to download that PDF so you can run the Lego adventure. And there's actually a, interestingly enough, there is a primer there on how to run the adventure without using 5e rules, sort of a system agnostic sort of feel to it. And if you want to see the adventure played out, you can definitely do so. They're having a actual play on April 6th at 9 a.m. Pacific time. So that would be central, 7 o'clock Central, 6 o'clock Eastern, and 8 o'clock Mountain. Don't want to leave the mountain folks out. But yeah, they're running it on April 6th. Jenny D is a part of it. But yeah, it's going to be Lego Dungeons & Dragons game night. So definitely check that out on either the D&D YouTube channel or their Twitch channel. Or you can also check it out at lego.com. And the idea of playing this Lego game without rules, or without D&D rules rather, is interesting. Because it's an official D&D product. And they're literally telling you like, hey, this is how you can do it without actually playing D&D rules. And it makes sense in a way, because if you just buy the Lego set, and because you're a huge Lego maniac, like our old friend Zach, if you know, and you don't really know about D&D, but you want to play this, right? You don't want to have to buy the player's handbook and all that and all the other rules, or you don't want to have to learn how to this entire system just to play this adventure. It makes sense to have non-D&D rules, or rather like a rule set that's non-D&D. To use. But what it's I say it's interesting because D&D is also partnered with Start Playing for their 50th anniversary play events. So the Descent into the Last Caverns of Sojkanth, they're running a promotion where you can go to Start Playing, find that game and play online with one of Start Playing's GMs or DMs. And so I feel, you know, and maybe this is just me being optimistic, but this has a feel of early 5e days where D&D was really, you know, Wizards of the Coast and the D&D team was really working closely with with those outside of their circle to promote the game, to promote like tabletop role playing games in general. And you know, like I said, they're starting to add third party content to D&D Beyond, which I feel is a good sign. They're partnering with Start Playing. You know, they're not keeping everything to themselves. They're actually reaching out to others in the tabletop role playing game space, and you know, expanding, reaching a handout rather than sort of having a like walled off garden where you can only do D&D stuff within, you know, these strict parameters. And so again, maybe it's just me being optimistic. Maybe it's just something that's innocuous and doesn't really have any long-term effects. But it's cool that you can, one, play this new adventure and have a rule set that's not exactly D&D. And two, you can go to Start Playing and find official games to play for D&D. So you go to Start Playing, you sign up for a game of Descent into the Lost Caverns of Sojkanth. And while you're there, maybe you find, you see another game, like a learn how to play Pathfinder 2E. And you think like, well, I've always wanted to learn how to play. You sign up for that. Or you see something that you've never heard of before, but looks awesome. Something like Morkborg. And you sign up for that. And I mean, that is how the TTRPG demon gets its claws sunk into you. At least that's how it worked for me. You just discover, like, you know, loving one thing and then wanting to know more about it and discovering so much more. But as far as news goes, that's just about it for the week. So what kind of homebrew shenanigans can we get into? We're talking Tasselhoff Burfoot. And so, of course, I had to look what kind of stuff is on the DM's Guild specifically about this amazing kender. Well, the Dragonlance Nexus has come through again with Tasselhoff's Pouches of Everything Revised / Champions of Kryn Chapter 1. So the Dragonlance Nexus proudly presents this complete sourcebook that encompasses all ages of Kryn, as well as an action-packed adventure for first-level characters. So the book contains, it's your one-stop shop for all things Dragonlance and Kryn in D&D 5th Edition. Uncle Tass will be your guide during your journey through the people, the factions, the monsters, and magic of everyone's favorite continent, Ancillon. And as well as that, you get 12 new subclasses. You get classic Dragonlance ancestries. You get faction rules to play as a Knight of Salamnia, as a Knight of Takisis, as a Wizard of High Sorcery. 5 new backgrounds, 8 new feats, 12 magic items. I mean, it's a good amount of content for sure. And in addition to all that, you also get a first level adventure, The Mystery of the Lost Patrol. Evil never rests, and neither should the forces of good. It has been 1 year since the end of the War of the Lance, and while the forces of the Whitestone Council are still battling the remnants of the Dragon High Lord armies, a new force arises. So it's awesome, and it comes from the Dragonlance Nexus, who for over 20 years they've been working to essentially promote and love Dragonlance. They have worked directly with Margaret Weiss Productions. They worked with her and her company on the Dragonlance 3.5 edition stuff. And you know, if you are a fan of Dragonlance, if you love Dragonlance, or if you want to find out more about Dragonlance, you can't go wrong visiting DragonlanceNexus.com. And like I said, their products are fantastic. Definitely check it out. You can get the PDF for less than $20, and you can actually get a hardcover. If you're into physical D&D media like I am, that's probably the best route. So there's a link to that in the show notes. Definitely check it out. It's got 4.5 star ratings. Trust me, it's going to be worth it if you want to expand your Dragonlance 5e experience. That being said, let's jump back to the show. Welcome back. We are talking Tasselhoff Burfoot from Dragonlance fame, the War of the Lance fame. And that's exactly what we're going to talk about right now, is Tass's involvement in the War of the Lance. We've discussed the War of the Lance from several different angles. We've discussed it, you know, at large. We've discussed it in our past Dragonlance Companions episodes, you know, from the perspective of Flint, of Sturm. And so we're not going to try not to go over We're going to gloss over a lot of the action that we've already discussed and try to focus more on, you know, what Tass is doing during this period of time. And then at the end of that, we're going to also discuss what he's got going on post War of the Lance. He's still got quite a bit of history, even after probably the most consequential event of Dragonlance history, minus the Cataclysm itself. But 5 years pass. Tass is reunited with Tanis and Flint outside of Solas. You know, they smash some goblins that try to, you know, attack them. Just sort of get back in the groove of, you know, just killing goblins. And then they head toward the inn of the Last Home. At the inn, as we all know, they encounter the drunken Hedrick, the high theocrat of Solas. Hedrick falls into the fireplace. Taz attempts to hit him, to knock him down with the disguised blue crystal staff, but this action actually heals Hedrick and reveals the staff's true nature to everyone. An old man talking about, Lord Toad wants that blue crystal staff. And so basically the jig is up, and they have to run away or they're going to be captured. They escape capture. They reach Zaxxarath, but eventually they can't outrun the authorities too much longer that Toad has released. And they're imprisoned in Solas, and then they are going to be shipped off to Pax Tharkas to work at a slave camp. However, before they get to Pax Tharkas, they escape, and they eventually take the entire slave camp down. They chill out with some dwarves and, like, you know, sort of regroup, re-energize, and then they defeat Dragon High Lord Verminar, take down the camp, free all the slaves. And then they sort of regroup, and come spring, they follow one of Tass's maps to Tarsus to find ships for the refugees, which, as we spoke to at the beginning of the episode, it's a good thing that this is one of his maps that is actually genuine and factual and not one of the maps he made as a kid. Otherwise, they probably would never reach Tarsus. So they reach the city. However, it's landlocked and now controlled by the Dragon Army. Once inside the city, Tass finds a lost library and uses Glasses of True Seeing to read about dragon orbs. That'd be something that I would, like, literally, like, wet my pants at. If I'm in some strange city and I find a lost library.
Yeah. And you get to read about dragon orbs, and they're real in the world you live in.
I mean, well, they know that dragons are real. They see them all the time. But I mean, that would be the cherry on top, to read about something awesome like dragon orbs. I'm just talking about just finding a lost library.
Right. Yeah. That would
in and of itself.
Yeah. That's like some, well, yeah, it's very like weird fiction, you know, like, things that appear in strange cities, alleyways that are there sometimes and not others. That's some of my favorite stuff. I love that weird architecture stuff.
Yeah. I mean, like, Dragonlance, you know, pulls from so many different inspirations and kind of tropes from sci-fi and fantasy. And I feel that's what makes it so unique and fun. It's, you know, like Dark Sun is like very harsh and brutal, and Spelljammer is, you know, it's space, you know, if it's, it has a lot of like corollaries, like Flash Gordon or even like Star Wars or Star Trek. Whereas Dragonlance, like, you can find, you know, the sort of analogous stuff, like obviously Kender and Hobbits. But then you've got this other stuff, like I said, like this weird fiction sort of idea that there's this lost library. And it's got, you know, stuff like from like Greek mythology, like the tragic hero of Sturm. You know, so like it's pulling, like, you know, from various different inspirations and making it all work as a cohesive whole. And that's what I feel makes it so great. At least in my humble opinion. So, finds a lost library, reads about dragon orbs. The companions are then split up, survive an attack by the Red Dragon Army, as well as the Blue Dragons commanded by the Blue Lady. And Tass travels with Flint as well as others, including Sturm and some of the Knights of Salamnia. So at this point, they split the party. A few of them head to Icereach, while Tass travels with Flint and Sturm, as well as some other folks, some of the Knights of Salamnia. There, they experience a dream similar to the one that Tanis and his friends had in Sylvanesti, where in this dream, Tass is poisoned and dies. I don't like that at all.
That's a bummer.
That's a huge bummer. Imagine having a dream. Imagine you and I having a dream about one of our friends dying. The same way, the same dream.
Like shared dream.
Yeah. And that's what happens in it. Not something cool.
Right. And we wake up. That's the first text I'm sending. It's like, did you have this dream too?
I mean, obviously we wouldn't know that we would have the same dream. The first text is like, man, I had the craziest dream. And then immediately after you hit send, you see like my three little dots.
Right. Like, what was your dream about?
So once they reach Icewall Castle, they kill Vyothas, who is holed up there, take the dragon orb, and then sail to the Isle of Sancrist. But before they're able to make it there, their ship crashes on southern Urgoth, and they're captured by the Sylvanesti elves. And they turn them over to the Qualinesti elves on the island. And there they're imprisoned, but manage to escape with the help of Lorana. They flee into the mountains to reach a Salamnic castle, a Knights of Salamnia castle, located elsewhere on the island. And there is where Sturm and Derek, Crown Guard, another Knight of Salamnia, take the orb to the fortress, while Tass and the others take another route through the mountains to evade pursuit. They come across this strange place with a dragon carving outside the cave. And while the others fall under a sleep spell, Tass goes on an adventure in the mountain, which is very on brand for Tass. And he finds the supposedly dead Fizban alive. Now, Fizban's, for all they know, just a very eccentric, powerful mage. So he brings Fizban back, who, you know, then uses his magic to wake his friends. And then he leaves with Fizban. He later reunites with the companions at the Whitestone Council, where Tass speaks for the Kender, smashes a dragon orb, revealing the effectiveness of the dragon lance. The council then orders them to the High Claris Tower. And at this point, after the meeting, Tass, Lorana, Sturm, Flint, they go to the tower and defend it against the dragon army. Tass fights bravely. Lorana uses a dragon orb, the dragon orb that was found by Tass, to repel the dragon army. But of course, this is where Sturm ultimately sacrifices himself in combat against Kitiara, the blue lady who had become a dragon high lord. So, you know, the war is won. However, there were casualties, but Tass returns as a hero. He and Flint were given that dragon to ride into battle. You remember that from the Flint episode?
Yep.
Tass teases them a little bit to, you know, because, I mean, if Flint hates being on boats, he's going to hate flying through the air on a dragon. Come on.
Yeah.
But Tass manages to tease him enough to get him into the saddle. And they go on more adventures, like capturing a dragon army officer, liberating the city of Kalaman. Yep. Stuff like that. You know, stuff that homies do, right. Stuff that bros do. That's what we do.
Yeah. Very Timon and Pumbaa in the, you know,
like King One and a Half.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm pitching here.
This is War of the Lance One and a Half for sure. however, it's also during this time that Flint suffers his fatal heart attack. You know, something that deeply affects Tass. Obviously, like, they've been friends for a very long time, very close friends. During an assault on an Araka, Tass is captured but rescued by the Majir twins. They escape the Temple of Naraka, but Tass not only loses his pouches, but also the magical knife Rabbit Slayer that he had received all the way at the beginning of the War of the Lance. That this magical dagger was named by Caramon Because to a normal-sized humanoid, I say normal, to a human-sized humanoid, it's just a small dagger, even though to someone a kinder size, it appeared to be a sword.
Right, like a
And
short sword, yeah.
right, and Caraman just sort of teased him, like, that's a rabbit slayer. That's something that'll kill a rabbit. But he reunited with his companion friends and then decided to return to Kendermore. In 356 AC, Tass and Caraman were sent to protect Chrissiana, a powerful cleric who had fallen in love with Raistlin, on her journey to the Tower of High Sorcery at Weyrith. Now, for those with eagle ears, that's exactly the Tower of High Sorcery that was in the adventure that we just ran for our actual play, Tales from the Tower. Little shout out to that. Check it out if you haven't listened to it. And check out the Splinterverse Dragonlance Companion book on DM's Guild, as well as our friends over at Tabletop Journeys who wrote the entire adventure. So they are escorting Chrissiana to the Tower of High Sorcery. She is attacked by Lord Soth, but is saved by Paladine's intervention. However, this salvation causes her soul to be detached from her body as a result. Basically, your body might die, but at least if your body is killed, your soul perseveres.
That's nice.
Right. So Taz and Caraman carry her to the tower, where a meeting of the Conclave was convened to decide her fate. During the meeting of the Tower of High Sorcery at Weyrith, a report is delivered about Raistlin's plan to challenge the Dark Queen. Now, despite this, the wizards decided to send Caraman and Chrissiana back in time to an era of the King Priest so that he might be able to heal Chrissiana. They are sent back in time with the device of time journeying, but accidentally transported Tasselhoff along with them, which is actually against the laws of magic restricting time travel for the Kender, as well as other what are known as gray gem races. Now, these are species that were created as a result of a magical artifact known as a gray gem. So it's one of these sort of like world-changing events, kind of like the Cataclysm, kind of like the War of the Lance. This actually predates the Cataclysm, but essentially there was this magical stone known as the Gray Gem of Gargith that created these new species. Stubborn and or not created, I mean, changed species into totally new species, like us, like ogres became minotaurs. Also formed were the Kender, the goblins, sea elves, stuff like that. So because of the sort of magical rules, the magical laws, Kender are not supposed to time travel. But of course, Taz does it anyways. So the three appear in an alley of the Lord City of Istar, which is, again, thousands of years in the past, where Caraman was promptly arrested for, quote unquote, attacking a cleric of Paladine. It's a, case of a mistaken identity, sort of thing. Very much Three's Company type situation. thrown into jail with Caraman, Taz is then sold at a slave market in Istar to fight in the arena. Taz then witnesses the fiery mountain hit Istar, and though he thought he was dead and in the abyss, he wasn't actually really dead. He was just in the abyss. Like, I'm dead and in the abyss. Well, you're half right. In the abyss, Taz is struck speechless for the second time in his life when he meets Takisis in her true form. Now, of course, we know Takisis is essentially the Tiamat of Dragonlance. They are one and the same. Five-headed chromatic dragon, pure evil. And this is also interesting because at this point, he feels a little bit of fear. So what does it take to scare a Kender, even just a little bit? Well, apparently the most evil creature in creation. Being face to face with them. Or I guess face to faces, since it's a five-headed chromatic dragon.
Do you think the dragon like slowly moved all five of its heads past his face so that they could all have a face-to-face moment?
Probably. That's nice. Why not?
Yeah. That's a nice, if I had five heads, I would do that.
I mean, it's probably also what instilled that fear into him.
Yeah, it was like the first head, he's like, okay.
Sure, whatever. Like, you got two, then three, and then by five. I'd say he probably got the most scared, probably around three or four.
Yeah, he starts sweating bullets around three.
And then by the end of it, though, you're like, okay, I've got it. I get it.
It's
a little much. Diminishing returns, for sure.
Let's wrap this up.
let's get this party wrapped up here. So he also meets a gnome by the name of Nimsh, who actually fixes the broken device of time journeying, and together they escape the abyss, but end up in a jail in Thorbarden, which is the Dwarven Fortress, as we know. Tasselhoff's timely reappearance also manages to save Caramon from certain death. Caramon and Taz then confront Raistlin and Christiana prior to their traveling through the portal. Raistlin kills the gnomish friend, thinking that he could stop him from going to the abyss. But instead, Caramon uses the device of time journeying at the same moment Raistlin completes the casting of a spell. And the result is the destruction of the magical fortress of Zaman and the annihilation of the armies of the Plains of Durgoth, which are now known as the Plains of Death. Which I love. This is a kind of go back and sort of like retrofit these events and locales that exist, and they're a result of like time travel, which I think is a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's very Lost season 5, right?
Yeah, it's very cool. I like it a lot. So Raistlin and Christiana successfully manage to enter the portal, while Taz and Caramon are transported forward in time to 358 AC, returning to a barren wasteland where Raistlin has in fact succeeded in his quest for godhood. They make their way to the Tower of High Sorcery at Weyrith, where Astinus, the Chronicler, sits with the final volume of the Chronicles, while Raistlin Majir, the god, torments Par Salian, who is a powerful white-robed mage. Instructed by the White Robes not to allow Raistlin to leave the Abyss, Taz and Caramon return to Palanthas in their present time of 356 AC to prevent Raistlin from re-entering the world through the portal. Taz ends up reading the final volume of the Chronicles from an alternate timeline and learns that he would die, that Tanis, half-elven, would die fighting Lord Soth. Obviously, Taz doesn't want his friend to die, especially at the hands of Lord Soth, that scoundrel. And so instead, Taz convinces Tanis to follow him to the Tower of High Sorcery at Palanthas, where Caramon has attempted to enter the Shoykin Grove, which is the grove of trees which protects the tower. Caramon and Tanis use the time-traveling device to get to the Flying Citadel so they could enter the city, and Taz is able to be carried to the Citadel, convincing others to basically, like, let me hitch a ride with you. And it's at this point that Taz and a gully dwarf take control of this Flying Citadel, and they fly the Citadel over the top of the Tower of High Sorcery, which allows Caramon and Tanis to enter the tower. It's here that Caramon is able to convince his brother, Raistlin, to abandon his pursuit of godhood. Taz takes the Citadel over the ocean and turns it upside down, which I love this. I mean, so it just basically, all the draconians and all the other evil minions and creatures just fall off of it.
They just shake it out.
They just shake it out, essentially, which is great. I mean, it's, again, very much on brand for an idea Taz would have. And so following the end of this, Taz gives the Flying Citadel to the gully dwarf that he befriended, whose name is Rounce. Despite the destruction of the city, Palanthas repulses the invasion of the Blue Lady's army, rises again. Taz then becomes to be known as Uncle Taz to Caramon and Tika's four children that they have following their adventures. And he continues to have his own adventures until the next war comes to Ancelon. He is very much involved with the Chaos War, The War of Souls, and we're going to leave that those both of those are episodes in their own right, 100%, and we'll get to those eventually. But in between those times, like sometime between 356 and 383 AC, Taz kind of assumes that he would die before Caramon for some reason. And so Bisbin gives Taz that device of time journeying, so that Taz could speak at Caramon's funeral, which is, again, so adorable. Like, I want to be able to speak at your funeral, but I think I'm going to die before you. So let me travel forward in time to do so.
I mean, if we had this device, I would insist that we all, our whole group of friends, do this for each other.
So Taz arrives at the funeral too late, but he discovers his very pleasant future, one where a child of Caramon and Tika, one of the four that referred to him as Uncle Taz, is now the head of the White Robes. And the son of Tanis and Lorana is a ruler and diplomat of sorts, being the head of the United Human Nations. And I love the way this was described, as Taz had some refreshments and then returned to his proper time.
He ate some future food.
I mean, like, yeah, what do they got going on in the field of food?
Future? How have snacks evolved?
Exactly. What are beverages like at this time? That'll just about wrap us up for Tasselhoff Burfoot. Like I said, that is not the entirety of his history, because he still is very much involved with the Chaos War, with the War of Souls. But like I said, those events are definitely episodes unto themselves, and we will definitely get to them. If nothing else, doing these episodes on the Companions has rekindled my love. And I don't say that I never disliked Dragonlance at any point, but I just remembered how much fun it was. And so definitely want to continue talking more Dragonlance. And if you have any other topics or lore subjects that you are interested in hearing about, by all means, give us a shout out. Follow us on the social medias and let us know there. You can email dndlorecast@gmail.com. Like I said, we have a loose schedule as far as what we're going to talk about, but things can change. If you want to hear something, we want to hear about it, and we want to let you hear it. Does that make sense? It's a lot of hearing going on.
Yeah. But I think I'm hearing it correctly.
I think I'm saying it correctly as well.
Yes.
Sean, you got anything you want to talk about? Something at the end of the month, possibly, that is exciting?
Yeah. On April 30th, Titan Books is putting out they've got the Conan the Barbarian license right now. And they've already started putting out books, which is very exciting. But I have a short piece called Lethal Consignment that's coming out on April 30th. It's going to be an ebook. It's $2 for like a little novelette. So, you could probably read it in one sitting, but it's a tale of high adventure on the water. Conan's on a ship, and there are monsters. So if you're into any of those things,
if you're into Conan, if you're into ships, or if you're into monsters, one of those three, at least one of those three things, you're going to have a great time. If you're into two of those things, I mean, you're going to have a great time. And if you're into all three of those things,
your heart chamber is going to be full to bursting.
Your heart chamber will explode from delight and joy. So yeah, we will have a link to that in the show notes. So yeah, it's like a short story on steroids, like a very long short story, about 20, 25 pages or so. Yeah, definitely check it out. A couple bucks. Conan is the best. So freaking cool. And one of the things that have, like, Robert Howard's work has inspired D&D and vice versa. D&D has started to inspire Conan. So I love Modiphius's tabletop role-playing game for Conan. And so, and I love you. So yeah, I'm going to read it. It's going to be fun.
I love you too.
Well, that being said, thank you so much for listening. My name is Sergio.
My name is Sean.
Fare thee well, dear listener. And until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at D&D Lorecast. or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.com.